do begin.
Hey, what is up, guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Primate Podcast. Today I have the two great founders of My Grito Industries. We have Oscar, we have Rob. What's up, guys? Thank you guys for letting me into your space, like I mentioned earlier, and having me here.
No, absolutely. Well, thank you for asking us to be on the podcast, Eddie. We're very excited to tell you a little bit about us, but at the same time, find out a little bit more about you and how some of our listeners can be introduced to your podcast, and hopefully we can help you get at least two more followers.
Two more. Hey, any follower counts. Honestly, when I see that the count go up, I'm like, it's one more person in the bucket, you know? Like,
yeah, Menno, one at a time.
Well, exactly, you know, and see, you guys do your stuff. I know you guys, for at least My Grito, started in 2020 or a little bit before the pandemic. At this point, you guys just celebrated your third year in September, no?
Yeah, Simon.
Damn. How's that journey been for you guys?
It's been great. I mean, like I said, you know, congrats to us for 3 years, man. You know, like, it just to do anything more than a year, 2 years, whatever, but 3 years and doing something with one of my best friends, like, it's been amazing so far, you know, so we're super proud of where it's at now and where it's going.
So when this started, like, I know initially you started with Wiretap Records, and you've been doing that for...
Next year will be the 10 years of doing Wiretap Records, yeah.
Damn, dude, that's fucking crazy. So you were just telling me a little bit before air that that you've been doing radio work for the last couple of decades at this point, or a decade or so, right?
Yeah, no, I worked for K-Rock, obviously the legendary station here in LA, for 12 years, up until 2018. You know, so my background's in radio. I worked in sales and marketing there for a number of years, you know, and then at some point, you know, not that, you know, I'll give the quick backstory on kind of Wiretap in general, but I mean, like, not that I wasn't, like, happy in my job, obviously working in radio and going to free shows, and, you know, it's obviously a fun job, right? But I wasn't, like, I want to say I wasn't, like, creatively fulfilled, yeah. You know, I wasn't really doing much with, like, creatively, you know, I'd stop kind of going to shows, I'd kind of stop being, participating in the local scene or, you know, independent music, right? And, you know, I told my wife, I think I want to, like, do something, like, creatively. I want to put out a 7-inch record, you know? And she's like, you want to start a label? I was like, no, I don't want to start a label. I want to do one and then get out of my system and be done with it. Do just one, you know? And she's like, okay, well, how much is it going to cost, you know? And so once we got the okay from the wife to be like, all right, cool. You know, this is how much you can spend. Get out of your system and do it, right? Mm-hmm. Almost like a bucket list type thing.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so... you know, luckily the first one went fairly well, you know, and, you know, the second one did fairly well. And here we are, you know, almost 10 years later, 150 plus releases. And, you know, obviously, yeah. So,
and then during some point, in that time frame, you started helping him out, right? In terms of the label for Wiretap.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even when he was working at K-Rock, I was fortunate enough to be one of the buddies that got to go to all these free shows and and go backstage y todo este pedo, and I was having a fucking great time.
He was.
Yeah. He was. I remember most of Coachella, not like half of Coachella.
Half of Coachella.
just because of, there's a lot of fun activities, things to do there.
The perks.
Yeah, I only went to Coachella once back in 2011, and that's when Yeah, 2011, I think the alt rock scene was still pretty big. Mm-hmm. Black Keys, fucking Kings of Leon, all these other bands. And I think, to me personally, since then, kind of Coachella felt like it kind of went a little bit down the hill. I mean, the music style was in my taste, so that's why I didn't go to them anymore. But it looked like it completely took a whole, you know, fucking 360, whatever you want to call it, into some other territory, you know, which is, it looks like people are still enjoying it. But it just kind of goes to show, like, the older you get, you kind of start to stick into, like, the stuff that you grew up with, you know, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think music festivals in general and Coachella in general, like other festivals like Lollapalooza and anything else, they kind of go with the way music is.
Yeah.
You know, and rock is right now is not, it's all about pop right now, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of why a lot of us kind of still listen to stuff from, like, the, you know, like the stuff that we grew up on or whatever.
Yeah. Right? I was just going through, like, a memory lane of down, like, specific bands that I used to check out when I was younger. You know, I used to kind of play around with the punk scene too when I was, like, in middle school and high school. So I was seeing bands like The Casualties, like, all these underground bands. And, like, just seeing them now, like, oh, they disbanded, or this person's not doing this anymore, they retired music. It's like, damn, people's lives just get in the way. And, you know, sometimes it's harder for you to kind of maintain that momentum you have going with whatever project or hobby or whatever thing you're working on. So seeing people kind of be disciplined to kind of keep going with their stuff is, like, that's fucking cool, you know, because you know there's motivation, or not motivation, but I'll say discipline, because sometimes discipline is stronger than the motivation, because motivation can kind of fade throughout the time, but you build that discipline and you're going to keep going regardless of what you're doing.
No, absolutely. It's like to say, you can't really control results and what happens, you know, what you get out of the music industry, but you could definitely control your efforts.
Yeah.
And as long as you still have a passion about it and you're still financially able to do it, your heart's still into it, then, you know, le echas ganas and, you know, hopefully you enjoy doing it.
Was it like when you guys first started, at least from your experience, at least first with Wiretap and then both of you guys with Magrito, like what have been some of the challenges that you guys kind of have to face, like in real human terms, like outside of just like the business part of it, like personally, what has been like the hardest thing for you guys to overcome?
I think one of the things has always been because both Rob and I, we have the full-time jobs. We we're married, not to each other. We have kids. The kids are very active in a lot of activities outside of school. I think it's life.
Yeah.
Because here we're doing a full-time job. Then we're going back to the label and doing as much as we can because we're very passionate about the label as well. And then when you want to go out there and support a lot of these bands, or you want to go ahead and check out other artists, other bands that you're interested in, now it's a matter of going to a show on Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
and then Thursday, and then Friday, and then you got the weekend, and then the wives start asking, when are you going to stay home?
Yeah.
And for us, I think both of us experienced this. It was one of those things where we needed to do a much better job in balancing our time
mm-hmm.
with everything, where our priorities are at. It's always for me. It's always for Rob going to be our families.
Yeah.
Make sure that they're taken care of. But at the same time, just being more selective when there are all these amazing shows that are out there, local shows that are out there, local talent that's out there. It's trying to choose when and where we can go, mm-hmm. you know, go support them.
Yeah, that's difficult. I mean, you got your life going on, so you kind of have to be selective about what you do, regardless of how many invitations you're being thrown, you know, like, damn, I can't go, and I wish you could, and it's not nothing personal for anybody, but sometimes it is just hard to make that
time. And especially coming out of the pandemic, like, we started the label during the pandemic where live shows weren't a thing, mm-hmm. you know, and obviously we got creative with, like, live streams and other stuff to kind of help the bands kind of get exposure and whatnot, but post-pandemic now, every one of our bands are actively playing shows, and it's hard to kind of be like at every show, you know, but
yeah,
we do as much as we can to be at shows and support all the bands that we work with, right? Not only for Magrito, but also for mm-hmm. Wiretap. So, you know, the blessing of the curse is that, you know, all our bands are out there playing, and we can, at any given weekend, we can go to any show, but you gotta choose kind of like, you know, priorities sometimes, you know.
Now, what was the idea behind Magrito? Like, what, when you guys were like, hey, we got to do this, like, what was that spark that made this happen?
Well, I think, like Rob said, it was, we started Magrito during the pandemic, just like so many other projects that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And as things were starting to just, you know, get really dark, there was no live shows.
Yeah.
We wanted to do something to get a little bit more creative. And the fact is that Rob is solely the one running Wiretap. I was there to help him out from time to time whenever I can,
mm-hmm.
but that was his label. And I was having such a great time with him, not only just the music and the fun and all the pisto and other things that I was enjoying along the way, but I was really admiring Rob for everything that he was doing with his label and the way a lot of these artists looked at him,
mm-hmm.
the way they were so happy and grateful for all the work that Rob was able to put in to help them out with their dreams. And I you know, I mentioned to Rob that, you know, I want to have that feeling as well. I feel like I can also bring some value
mm-hmm.
to, based on my talents, what I've done for so many years in my career, that maybe him and I should partner up and do something together. Now the fact is that the way I viewed it is Wiretap is his baby, so it's hard for me to get plugged in there.
Yeah.
So we did get a little bit kind of trying to think outside the box, get a little creative. What can we do? Can we do an imprint and have that imprint be more 50-50 between you and I as partners?
Mm-hmm.
And when we started talking about, okay, well, what is this imprint going to be? You know, the reality is here, you know, here we are in my garage where it's like a little cantina and we're having some drinks and we're like, well, you know what? Fuck it. We're Norteños playing in the background and we're like, or we're both Chicanos. And Rob's been able to, you know, really build all these resources over the years of not only running Wiretap, but also being involved in the music industry for so long as a career,
mm-hmm.
that he had all these contacts, all these resources. So why don't we extend what he's been able to accomplish over these years and provide it to other people that look just like us.
Yeah.
Because the fact is that even then, as we're going to a lot of these shows, especially a lot of the big shows, you don't really see a lot of Latinos out there. You do see a good handful that are very successful, but we wanted to see if we can maybe help out, especially the local scene, and them getting more recognition, them hitting some of the bigger venues.
Yeah. So it was basically like the need to just see more of people who look like you on stage, represented,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and not just on stage, but also like headlining, you know what I mean? Or like getting that bigger portion of the cake, or whatever, right? Because like, you know, like, yeah, have Latino bands and not been part of independent music and even Orange County, at least in whatever, for years and years, right? Decades. But we always felt, you know, Oscar and I used to go to shows when we were younger. We'd go to shows and, you know, we'd look on stage and it'd be nothing but, you know, non people of color, right?
Yeah.
And look at the audience, especially growing up in LA, and what is it? It's all Latino kids, right? So you'd go to a punk show and it'd be all Latino kids, and who would be on stage is, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that was part of the motivation behind it, you know, but also like when we decided to start Magrito, it wasn't only just, you know, that we were only going to work with Chicanos or Latinos. So it was more about celebrating the culture, you know. Obviously, growing up in Orange County and California and SoCal, like the culture of Latinos, culture is stems like all around, right? Like it's car culture, it's the right. soul scene. It's like, obviously, you know, here in California, like it's the ska punk scene. It's like it's everything, you know. So it's like that's kind of, we never wanted a certain sound for Magrito and from the label side of things, like because like we don't stick to just one genre, you know. Like, but the Magrito sound is basically what we call like the California sound, right? Like it's hip hop. It's that, like, yeah. We grew up on Zapp and Raja. We grew up on like, you know, it's punk, skate punk. We grew up on Green Day. We grew up on like everything. So it's like a little bit of everything, you know. Like it's soul. So we grew up on like Kareth 101 oldies. So it's like a little bit of everything, right? So
yeah, it's beautiful because I mean, you know, me coming from the background of Mexican American too, like it's like you were thrown into these two cultures where, first of all, at least for me, when I first started with this, I felt like I had to balance my Mexican side versus my American side, right? And it was like, oh man, do I belong more to them? Do I belong more to fucking the Mexican side? And for a really long time, I felt disconnected in a sense from the Mexican aspect of it, at least from my parents' background. Like I felt like, I grew up with it. Like, you know, wake up in the mornings, my mom's cleaning to fucking Selena or to, you know, whoever it was. And I'm just like, all right, cool. This is just my normal stuff. So I didn't really connect with it. And it wasn't until maybe the last 5-7 years that I very like much woken up to like, hey, I need to embrace this. Like, this is me, and like, this is part of me. And up until then, I felt like I was kind of deflecting or set. I didn't want to accept fully the culture, you know. I don't know what it was, but up until now, I've been really like looking deep into that, trying to reconnect in any type of form, you know.
Yeah, your story is not different from a lot of people in general. Like, yeah. I'll even give just my experience, obviously, and my own experience. But I mean, like, we're both in our 40s, so I think maybe even like our generation in general. But like, especially in the late 80s or early 80s, when we grew up, you know, like Chicanos and Latinos experienced a lot of like assimilation. You know what I mean? Like, so I think a lot of our families people from our generation maybe felt like they needed to kind of assimilate and not be as Latino or Chicano and kind of hide that, which I think is a shame. But I mean, I think it did happen. You know what I mean? Like, does that make sense? You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, it does. I remember actually when I was in elementary school, they passed this law. I didn't know shit about laws, you know, but there was a law that said that you couldn't speak Spanish in public schools anymore. So, you know, I talk Spanish in my house, so I was okay because I can talk English as well. But I saw a bunch of my friends that didn't have the capability of speaking just, you know, straight English, that they were suffering a lot. They got held back. And it was just those things that you feel like you look at now and you're like, that's just straight targeting people that are from this culture, especially in LA. I thought that was just crazy. But how has that been for you guys? Like, what do you guys have like a specific time you can remember that was like important to your experience moving forward with what you're doing?
I mean, specifically with music for me, I think just growing up in Santana, there was a lot of different music that I was into growing up. Obviously into a lot of Spanish music, norteños and things like that. I say the word norteños and you hear a beer open up. Yeah, that's pretty common. But I would listen to a lot of that in the neighborhood. I would listen to a lot of oldies, a lot of funk. I was really heavy into classic rock and punk music. Mm-hmm. And I think on the Chicano side with music, specifically for me, what really got me more excited about not just enjoying the music, but feeling more connected to it, was when I heard Kid Frost, when he was rapping the song, "This is for La Raza." That song specifically really connected for me because it was not only the words, hearing him rap in both English and Spanish, but at the same time, if you check out the music video, and it looks like he's recording the video in a fucking neighborhood just like mine, right? With a lot of people that look just like me.
Yeah.
And it made me feel more like this is, that we can do also something with music, and we don't have to be overly Mexican. Not that that's a bad thing, but we don't have to be out there with Tejanas and doing all these different things, or we don't have to be overly American. That we can be in our lane, who we are, what we personally feel like we identify as.
Yeah.
And if it's Chicano, Kid Frost, Chicano, that it's okay. And just to fucking go for it. So that got me pretty excited to not only enjoy music on another level, but mm-hmm. also to really embrace my cultura and who I am, and specifically the word Chicano for me.
Dude, that's a good one, because I've had that issue. I feel like in a weird, one way or another, I feel like I have imposter syndrome for the word Chicano. Like, mm-hmm. I feel weird telling myself I'm Chicano, you know, because, which is interesting. I read this article recently. I forgot who wrote it. I actually have notes here. Her name is Natalie Rivera. It's an article I read online, but basically she was saying how, like, she can accept all these labels, Mexican-American, for first-generation Mexican-American or whatever, but she can't identify with a Chicana, because I feel like that, or she at least felt that, like, this was a word that had weight to it, that you were completely educated in the problems that happened in the past, present, and what's going on in the future. And this meant that you were kind of, in a sense, radicalized to the point where you were proud of your culture. And going back to what I just said earlier, like, I didn't feel like that for a really long time. So even now, just trying to embrace, like, the word Chicano, which is now it's coined to identify somebody from Mexican American descent, is like, fuck, am I that? Like, I know I'm a Mexican American, but I don't feel comfortable yet with that term, at least putting it to myself.
I can see that. I think a lot of people probably feel that way. With my daughters who are second generation, my upbringing to them is to be very comfortable in your roots.
Mm-hmm.
To understand that there is a lot of discrimination out there, that it's going to happen. But at the same time, even though I am Chicano, I'm not from Mexico. My parents are from Mexico, and that made me also feel like I'm more Chicano because of that. Me being first generation, I think in our generation, there was a lot of things that we were fighting against.
Yeah.
Heavy discrimination. Then you had individuals that were very powerful in the movement, like Gloria Huerta and all these other different individuals that were, you know, that did so much for Latinos, for Chicanos in general. Mm-hmm. That again made me very proud of who I am culturally. But I also tell my daughters, even though they speak Spanish but not that great,
mm-hmm.
I would put them in the category of No Sabo kids for the most part. I tried my best, but they'll tell you that it's my fault and my wife's fault why they can't speak Spanish. I said, fuck, yeah. Go to school. There's all these different apps. You can still learn it. I've been listening to a lot of Spanish music. And what's pretty awesome, actually, is that my youngest daughter, who she's still living home with us, you would hear her listen to a lot of Spanish music in her room.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty exciting. She's listening to all different types of genres, obviously. You'll hear Selena in her room, but at the same time, you also hear Peso Pluma out of all people.
Yeah.
She's listening to that. One time I heard her playing Bad Bunny, and I told her, turn that shit off. We don't listen to reggaeton in this house. But other than that,
yeah,
she's embracing it more. And she did ask me the question, you know, am I considered Chicana? Am I Latina? Am I Latinx? And I said, well, for me personally, mija, it's just for me, I don't like the word Latinx.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me personally. For you, I think you should label yourself how you feel comfortable. For me, you're my little Chicana.
Yeah.
Because you are still from the culture. You understand both cultures very well. You understand all the heritage, the traditions that we do here in the U.S., as well as the things that we do in Mexico. I do take her to Mexico quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment that she embraces the things that are in both cultures, not just Mexico, but also we need to realize where we live. And we also have to be very proud of being Americans as well.
Yeah.
Understand and appreciate both cultures. And if you do that, you're fucking Chicana, you're Chicano, right? So that's how I raise them. I don't know, Rob, if you view it a little bit differently, because I know when it comes to your parents, it was different for you on the way they were raising you versus the way my parents raised me.
Yeah, no, they were. I mentioned earlier, like I said, I've said in another podcast in the past that like my parents came to this country and were waving the U.S. flag, like they assimilated, you know, big time. They were, you know, like my name's Robert Daniel Castellon, you know, like my brother's John Christopher, like very, very American names, right? So they were here. They were playing, you know, they were here just, you know, to fit in, quote unquote fit in, right? So not that my parents hid, you know, like obviously at home we spoke Spanish, you know, all, you know, at home and whatnot. But I mean, like in public, it was very much like, you know, we did very much American type things. You know, we were part of the church and we were, you know, we embraced the church and, you know, we'd play Little League baseball. Not that, you know, other, but we were very much the American dream. Right. So, and not that it's very much different than me, how Oscar was raised, you know, his parents approach in general, but I mean, you know, like, and like, I still kind of think back now and wish that my parents were a little bit more, nurturing in terms of like my cultura, right? And giving me more of that. Like there was never any, you know, like, yeah, we squeeze here and we listen to a lot of like, you know, Spanish music. And I didn't have that as a kid, you know, but also I also grew up in a very religious home. So my music and when I grew up was more gospel music and church music, right? So I didn't really get a lot of that stuff growing up, but you know, like getting back to the point about like how you identify, you know, like I think identifying as a Chicano in general has to do with your surroundings, like, and where you grew up also, because like, isn't, to my understanding, being Chicano is how you feel that you're not enough Mexican or you know, Mexican in general, but you're not American enough, right? You're somewhat in between, right?
Yeah.
That's how I did define the word Chicano, right? So if someone who grows up only amongst all Chicanos, do you really feel Chicano? Like, you feel like you're just part of everybody else, right? Like, So it's like me growing up in you know, in Orange County in the 80s and 90s, whatever, like, I did feel Chicano because, like, it wasn't as accepted, quote unquote accepted. Yeah, there was discrimination, you know, growing up, and you know, we were discriminated on a daily basis, right? Oscar going to like even walking into a liquor store or walking into whatever, anything, right? So it's like, do my kids feel Chicano nowadays? Probably not, because you know, they don't identify in that sense, because I don't think they've experienced as much discrimination as maybe we have growing up. But you know, I think it also depends on kind of like your upbringing, you know, and your surroundings, you know. So
I started the podcast, well, not this podcast, I started podcasting back in 2013. So since then, I felt like there was a need for podcasts with people who reflected myself and my experiences. And it was because I needed to build a platform for other people who were in similar positions as me, looking for an opportunity to voice themselves. And I was like, you know what? If the platform doesn't exist, let me make a platform in my general area in Southeast LA and see who I can kind of help bring to the light. And that was my first taste of trying to help La Raza along with myself, you know, and it's like one of those moments that just felt very white, like eye-opening, and you know, it changed your perspective on what you wanted to do with your project. And I feel like you guys are doing that really good with My Grito, you know, like trying to uplift and bring people that are underrepresented, or not necessarily underrepresented, but don't have the platform to really voice themselves in their skills. I mean, tell me a little bit about how that's going on now. Like, at this point, you guys have, you know, a couple of bands on the label, you guys have podcasts on the label. Like, this is becoming a platform that encompasses a bunch of different medias.
A lot of growth.
Yeah.
There, I mean, for the first 3 years, it's been primarily Rob and I that have been running this independent label. Again, keep in mind, on top of our regular careers, just like so many people out there, right? You're doing multiple things. But we made the decision that we're going to take on more staff. We made the decision that we're going to take on an internship, because the reality is that we want more growth. We want to be able to really bring a lot more to our artists, not only our musical artists, but also our podcast. We want to do more for them. And we need to understand and accept the fact that Rob and I are only two people that have very busy lives, that we're very passionate about this product, but we can only do so. There's only so many hours in a day. And as it is, both him and I wake up extremely early. Both, you know, we go to bed real late, so we're doing long days as it is. But we came to the decision that we just need more help. So for the upcoming year, we're going to hire more staff that can really help us out in just being more effective in what we want to do.
Yeah.
For the upcoming year, what we want to do is we want to bring on more artists. I mean, Eddie, right before you came here, we were on a Zoom call with a band that we're very excited about that could potentially be joining the label. We've been talking to other bands that are looking to join the label. We've been talking to other podcast shows that are looking to join the label. Mm-hmm. So there's this growth that's there, and it's just a matter of Rob and I really looking at each other and saying, hey, can we take on this much extra work? And by us taking on that extra work, the fact is, can we also deliver what the ask are? Can we deliver on what we told people we were going to do?
Yeah.
And one of the things that we learned, at least for myself, I'm pretty sure for Rob as well, what I've learned since My Grito's really my first full experience in music, I've always been in business for as long as I can remember. But in music, what I learned is that even though when I feel like I'm being very open and honest and transparent with a lot of the artist, the talent, and just saying, hey, this is what My Grito's about. Here's what we want to do. Here's how we want to help you grow. I've realized that for some people, I think it's just the fact that, let's say, a label, even though we're just a small independent label, but a label is finally reaching out to them because they've been working their asses off, and now they have a label that's knocking at the door, and they're not listening to all the things that we're telling them that we're going to do for them. In their head, they're also thinking about all this other shit that we're not going to do for them, but they're thinking we're going to do it for them. Mm. And there comes a disconnect. And there comes what Rob and I have experienced. An artist thinking, well, I thought you guys were going to do this and this and that for us. I thought you were going to book us with all these shows. I thought you were going to do all these different things for us. And we're at anywhere in our agreement, anywhere in our conversations, we never presented ourselves as booking agents.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage you to go get a booking agency. If you're doing this all on your own, just like many of the artists that we're working with, they're very DIY. We're DIY. But you need to go out there and hire a booking agency. Here's three that we recommend to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't do it because life, they get busy with other stuff. They're focusing on just writing more music. Sometimes se ponen un poco huevones and they don't just want to fucking knock out the shit. Time goes on and they're thinking, wow, I don't have any shows booked. It's My Grito's fault.
Yeah.
No, it's not. We never told you that we were booking agents. So what I've learned is that even when I think that I'm being very open and honest with talent, I have to be, not all the time, but I want to be overly explain with a lot of clarity. Here's not only what we are, but here's what we don't do. We're not one to oversell ourselves. We are a small independent label. We're not the big labels. We can't do the things like an Epitaph can do. That's not us. What we hope for, Eddie, is that we're going to be the label that is going to help you prepare. So when a major label does knock at your door, you're going to be more well-balanced. You're going to have all the different things that would attract a label like that.
Right.
Because we're giving you that guidance. We're giving you that coaching just as a label. And yes, we do additional things naturally just because we do care a lot about these artists. Sometimes I feel like we're managing some of these artists, but that's mm-hmm. not what our role is. We're definitely not getting paid like we're doing. Like that's our job. Mm-hmm. But we do it because we care about them, right? So I feel like one of the things that I learned is that I have to over-explain at certain times what we are willing to do and what we can't do. Because what I don't want is somebody to feel like they were misled. That's the last thing that I want. Right.
No, I mean, that's important. I mean, again, you guys are being transparent, like you mentioned, from the get-go. And, communication is key. You hear it all the time. Like, with whatever you do, like, communication's important. And especially going back to the whole discipline over motivation thing, like, a lot of the times you see a label come up to you, you get that motivation, like, oh, hell yeah, I got it. But then eventually that kind of wanes down and you're like, ah, oh, damn, nothing's happening. And that's when the discipline comes in. Like, the discipline has to be there. I would say the discipline should be there by the time a label approaches you.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you've already established the effort and the work ethic. And by the time somebody comes knocking at your door, you're still doing your thing, you know?
Yeah. I think Rob said it perfectly not that long ago. If we feel like we have to work harder than you as an artist, as a band, there's something fucking wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, just like you're saying, like, when we start to work with the band in general, like, that's not like the time for the band to stop. Like, okay, we can relax. The band's going to do, now the label's going to do everything for us. Now right. We can take a break and they let them handle it. That's when the work begins. Like in our experience, that like, you know, when a band, you know, agrees to just sign with us in general, like that's when the work starts. You know, that's when what you've been doing to this point to get on our radar in general, has been working, but that's where the start, the work needs to progress from now on, you know? So it's like a lot of bands have the misconception that they hear a label and this is normally usually like younger bands, yeah, that they hear the word label and they think that they don't really know what a label does, you know? And that's part of our job is to kind of like educate them on what a label does and what they don't do. And especially what a label our size can do for them, because like the days are done where like a label, especially a label our size, where they're like coming in and paying for stuff and dropping money, like those days are done. Like a band at work that we would be talking to in general is never going to get have a label approach and say, hey, we're going to pay for everything, we're going to give you an advance. Like those days are done. Like, do they happen? Sure, you know, but they're you know, they're very few and far. And even major labels, yeah, obviously my day job, I work for a major record label, and I know for a fact that like these labels are not fucking with any band that's like not proven that they can do this on their own. They get to the point where they're like, they're established enough, and like an A&R guy from a major label is not going to come knock on your door if you're not packing 300 people into a local venue already on your own. So our job as a label, as an independent label, is to get the band step by step to step, getting them to the point where they're moving on to the next thing, where they can actually, you know, be on the radar of a big major label, right?
Yeah.
So
I think, like you just said, you're going to get noticed once you put the effort in there, you know, and it is a beginning. It's just a first step. And I think that's one of the cool things that I see a lot with the culture happening right now, like the do-it-yourself. Like people are just finding ways to fucking, you know, release albums or upload videos or like make their own stuff. And you're seeing the quality, the creative quality and the production value like skyrocket, because these people of color are people in the culture are having access to these tools when they're able to be like, hey, I can make some cool shit. Without the need of an overhead, somebody looking at me or waiting for somebody to fund me. I've seen a lot of the people just be like, hey, I spend my check on the camera. And then from there, boom. Do you think from the inception of My Grito till now, like what you guys had initially planned, do you think right now it's like met the expectations of what you guys thought of it at the beginning?
I think so, yeah. You know, I think Oscar and I are both patient people in general, you know. We knew that, you know, this thing is not, it's a marathon, right? Like we need, even just experience from Wiretap in general, like I knew that, you know, running a label, especially nowadays, like if you think it's going to blow up overnight and, you know, then you know, you shouldn't be doing this thing, because like, as with anything else, like it takes a few years for, you know, to, with proper, you know, branding and getting the, you know, the label or whatever your brand is to whatever point you want to get it to. Yeah. I'm super stoked at where it's at right now, you know? You know, I think we've built a nice community of artists and musicians and bands, and but also the podcasting, the network that we built over the last 2 years or 3 years, I'm super happy on it. You know, like, but also, I also want to keep building on that. You know, going back to kind of saying how you're saying like what, where you see it going and whatnot. Like, I don't even want to define what My Grito is and what it can be. You know what I mean? Like, we're primarily a record label. Working with music in general and also podcasting now, but what's to say we couldn't delve into like producing, you know, films and whatnot, or short films or whatever, and down the line, or, you know, doing whatever, you know, we do a lot more events, but I mean, like, My Grito is a brand that could dive into whatever other space, right? So that's my vision for the brand in general. It's not just a record label. Like, we even talk about, like, you know, we get referred to as a record label when we do much more than just a record label, you know? So
it's really cool what you guys are doing. Like, again, I've only been exposed to it for the last couple of months, maybe honestly at the beginning of the year, and I've seen like the podcast that you guys had on and the artists and stuff. I didn't know the Paranoias were on there, and I just had like a mini interview with them a few months ago over the summer, and then just finding out that some of these bands are under the label My Grito, I was like, what? Like, that's crazy, because, you know, you guys are growing along with the bands that are coming up as well and just fucking doing their own thing, you know? And that's how you guys bring value as well to your own platform. From your guys' perspective, like, you know, if you guys want to answer it individually or just, you know, whoever decides, but in terms of value, like, how do you guys define bringing value to your community through your project or through your label?
For me, I think kind of going back to the definition of Chicano, right? Like, you mentioned how you're only recently kind of embracing the, you know, you're identifying as Chicano, right?
Yeah.
I feel like if we are helping primarily younger people kind of like quote-unquote normalize, you know, like being Chicano and more embracing it more at a younger age, then we're kind of helping that, you know what I mean? So if I feel like, for me, growing up, I didn't feel as comfortable being proud, you know, being proud to be Chicano.
Yeah.
If we're helping younger people be more proud of embracing it, then I think we're doing our job, you know? So I think that that's how we're bringing value with the label.
For me, along the same lines, I mean, the way I view value, it's not necessarily what you do, but I think value really comes back to how you make the person feel about themselves that determines if you're bringing value to them or not. So if you have great value, if you have a purpose, again, it's not on what you're doing, it's how you're making people feel. And when we do have those wonderful conversations, meetings with the bands, Zoom calls with the bands, and we're celebrating a big accomplishment, a big landing with a specific media outlet via our PR team. When we're out at one of their shows and they just finished doing a fucking amazing set, and then they come down and we're having a chela together, celebrating and hugging each other, that to me is a value. That to me means something, because I think that's that little moment where you feel like you made a difference. And the other party knows what value you brought to them, and they appreciate you.
Yeah.
And I think when, as us as humans, when we feel appreciated, we only get more excited to want to keep doing that thing. At least for me, it is. The more value that I feel that I'm bringing to people, the more that, more purpose, the more excited I get, the more adrenaline I get about doing it more and more and more.
Yeah, man, those are very great responses. You know, it's recently I went to pump water at the Guateria and stuff. So I'm like getting my water and the guy's helping me out. And he's like, hey, you're the guy from that podcast, huh? And I was like, oh, yeah. He's, yeah, Social Prime. I was like, oh, yeah. Hey, what's up? He's like, dude, I've been listening to your podcast. Like, it's been cool that I hear you talk about our area, about our hood. You know, it's really rare when I pop a podcast and I hear about the high schools that we went to and all that stuff. And it's just those little things that just kind of connect with you. And you're like, oh, shit, people are listening. Like, they feel like they can connect to something that they're not used to hearing on you know, fucking podcast. It's like similar when you watch a movie. You're like, hey, that guy's my color, you know, and you feel like this certain way about it. And you kind of embrace it. And those are the little things that, whether you think about it or not, they have this impact to your subconscious, where you're like, holy shit, I'm being recognized. And if you're not, you have like this drive to want to be recognized, you know, whether it's by your people or just like the majority of everybody else, like you have that drive to just say, I'm gonna fucking do it regardless. And it goes back to the whole DIY stuff. And it kind of correlates again, going back to the punk culture. Like, that punk culture is about like, fuck it, I'm gonna take it myself. I don't care what it is, I'm gonna go through with it. And it becomes an attitude rather than just like looking like a punk, you know? And
yeah,
that's the whole spirit of the, you know, being a rebel and stuff, you know? And when people take their art and they push through it, regardless of what obstacles they have, that's when you're like, hell yeah, you know? And that's powerful.
I love what you just said, Eddie. And I think, I mean, that's how we want our artists to feel when they get recognized that way. When one of the bands is performing somewhere and people are singing their music out loud, they wanted to take pictures with them. That's when we see that, that's pretty fucking exciting. Because us as a label, we're not expecting that from fans. Oh, fuck, those are the Maigrito guys. That's not what we're looking for. What we're looking for, in essence, is that our artists feel that way about us. Because we're more behind the scene. The whole thing with Maigrito is to help out other, specifically other Latinos, for them to really get more recognized, for us to amplify what their talents are, whether it is music, whether it is art, whether it is a podcast. If we can help them grow and get more recognition, and for them to feel like what they're doing is bringing value because of the way people feel about listening to their podcast, the way people feel about listening to the music and singing along, especially that music that probably hits you real hard when you're having a very fucking bad day.
Yeah.
It's the value you bring to your community, the value you bring to charity, whatever is important to you. But when an artist does that, that fucking feels awesome. And when we see it, that gets us excited. But for, I think for Rob and I, when the talent appreciates us, that to me is rewarding for what we do specifically.
Yeah, well, quick, I went to the show for Chencha a few weeks ago, and they invited me. So
Chencha.
I show up, right? House of Blues, we're just chilling, going into the pit and stuff. But one of the most beautiful things that night was that their opening, they had an opening, like, orchestra before their set. And they brought over the band from, what is it called, Huntington Park High School. So it's just, you know, the band is just a bunch of high schoolers, 6-year-olds. They're playing,
awesome.
Brass.
That's cool.
And they brought them onto the stage, and they were doing their drum set and, like, their fucking whole thing in front of everybody in Anaheim. Like, was like, what? Or everybody else is like, why are they here? But somebody who's from the hood, and you see them being represented on stage, you're like,
that's awesome.
Holy shit. Like, they went through this whole thing to bring the kids to represent the area. And I was like, this is fucking cool. And that's my respect for Chencha Barrinches even grew more, because they're just local legends, and they're all about kind of, again, bringing the community together and kind of amplifying it the way, any way they can. So just seeing that again, it's just one of those little moments where you're like, fuck yeah. And like, it feels cool to be represented, or even if it's just within the cultura, like, you still know that everybody's trying, or some people are still trying to lift themselves up. Cause I know sometimes the culture can get a little like fucking competitive, and, you know, like, you want to shut each other down sometimes. But I think once we embrace the fact that we can do more together, I think that's when we're going to start seeing a faster change than what we're seeing right now.
That's absolutely important. And by the way, we've been a fan of Chencha for fucking years también. So yes, we're fans. Holler at us. Mayrito is interested, or we're listening.
Yeah,
nice. Big shout out to Chris también from Desmadre y Medio, because he also made a lot of introductions for us. So we're also a big fan of him. But to your point, yeah, when you see things like that, when you see other artists, people that have an opportunity, a platform, mm-hmm, to bring up other people that may have not had that opportunity, because that's huge. Because even for the band, you never know which one of those students that fucking light just sparked by, yep, them being at this, yep, show, and they're saying,
exactly,
I'm gonna do my own fucking band. Or maybe some of them are already in a band, right, outside of the school band, mm-hmm, and it just really sparks more fire under their ass, all because a band such as Chencha wanted to give them that platform for them to perform there. I think that's huge. And that's a perfect example of somebody bringing value or purpose to somebody outside of them.
Yes. And that's what I love. And again, that I was like, hell yeah, this is cool. You just keep looking in the pit, skanking, and just seeing like the banda. It's like, hey, it's just a magical moment, you know? But no, you know, again, it goes back to that. Like, you're going to inspire these people, like, whether you think about it or not, people are looking at you from one angle or another, and they're like, I want to be like this. I want to do this, you know, or being in front of the stage, in front of all this fucking crowd. Like you said, it sets that spark where you're like, this is what I want to do. And now you've already influenced the next youth, you know, the next generation of musicians or people who may, you know, eventually be on my Grito label. Be like, you know, you never
shit.
Know.
No, yeah.
But with that being said, real quick, I know we had these things served up. We got some firme mezcal, right?
We have some firme mezcal. We went ahead and decided to pour a little bit of the ensamble. So this is a good mezcal from our homies at Firme Mezcal. If you've been to the Mind Buzz, then you probably already heard from Gil, or as he stumbled to try and explain how to drink mezcal, which he only does so well. It's a good mezcal. It's very smoky. You always start off with giving it a little bit of besito, just to go ahead and embrace the kind of your palate with the taste. When you get a little bit of, you know, when you get past that first little besito and you feel like, hey, you know what, maybe I can go all the way and, yeah, shove my tongue down. No, that's something else. then you take a little bit of a bigger sip and you, okay, enjoy it.
So besito would just be what, he's putting up, you know, like a little.
Just a little bit up.
Like a little sip?
Yeah, a little sip.
Oh, that's it's like a little smoky, huh?
Mm-hmm. Y luego ahí le puedes dar un poquito más con confianza.
Yeah.
And it's just really a sipping drink.
Yeah.
It's not like your typical tequila where you just take a shot y todo puro pinche desmadre. It's not that. It's a good little smoky mezcal that you can sip on, that you can enjoy. You don't have to necessarily get hammered on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a good drink that can help you relax.
And she goes down smooth.
Simón.
She goes real smooth. No, thank you again for this. And I'm going to tell Gil that he forgot. I'm sure he's listening to this right now. And he's like, ah, fuck, you forgot to give me my shot, man. I'm going to hold him to it next time. But You know, again, what you guys are doing, I think it's awesome. You know, it's easy to say because I'm sure there's other organizations or groups or people that are trying to do something similar, just like how there's people trying to do podcasts similar ways. But, you know, it's about what you ultimately try to bring to the table and, again, try the influence that you're trying to, you hope you establish through the people that you're gathering to your platform, right? Because at the end of the day, these groups also kind of help identify who you guys are, what you guys are about, and what you guys kind of stand for in terms of, like, what you guys are trying to push forward with the culture. So, I mean, props for you guys. Like, it's cool just to see that regardless of where, you know, what perspective we're all coming from. You guys, you said you guys are mostly, or you guys were primarily raised in Orange County, right? I think you were in Whittier, or right now in Whittier?
I live in Whittier now, but we both grew up in Santa Ana, right here in Santa Ana.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, you know, like, I'm in Southeast LA, so it's like 30, 40 minutes from here. But regardless of the area, that are trying to do things better for the community and wherever respectively are, you know? And that's all we can keep doing. And of course, with that, we want to bring everybody together to make sure, like, hey, we got people in Orange County doing this. We got people in Southeast LA, wherever you're coming from. Like, everybody, there's pockets of fucking creativity and inspiration just waiting to fucking explode. So,
absolutely. And with that in mind, if for those of you that are listening to this episode, first of all, thank you for listening to the episode. We're glad that you are a big fan of Social Primate Podcast. We're hoping that you'd give Mayrito an opportunity to listen to us as well. If you have a specific talent that musically, if you have a podcast, if there's something that you want to ask us to see if this is something that we can possibly help you really amplify what you're doing, we welcome it. We're not in the position to be taking on everybody, but if there's any type of guidance that we can provide, we would love that. As a company that since we are growing, if you are a creative and you are very good with digital media, if you are very good with TikTok, if you are very good with all these other things and you feel like you could bring value to an up and coming label, we're open to that because we know that both Rob and I have big dreams for Mayrito. We have big dreams for Wiretap. And if there's people out there that are looking to be a part of this, the door's open. And, you know, we're looking to make 2024 our best year by far.
I think that's one important thing that we should all take away from this is just like sometimes we shouldn't be gatekeepers to information, you know, that we're part of. Because I feel the moment you become that, you're of course limiting the progress of your culture, of yourself, so the people just around you. And you're prohibiting inspiration from being influencing other people. So thank you guys for just doing this for everybody else, man. Because everybody else, we all need guidance, dude. Like, I know for sure I need fucking guidance every now and then. And it's hard. You know, you get stuck in these mental states where you're like, fuck, what happened? Where do I go? What do I do? Yeah. But sometimes it's just, you know, taking a step back and just being like, I got this. You know, that's...
Yeah. We all need these, like, little, encouragement moments, mm-hmm. right? Like, even just today doing this, like, being able to sit here with you, like, helps us kind of, like, realize, hey, you know, we're doing good, right?
Yeah.
So every now and then, like, just with anything else, like, you have moments where you're like, damn, why am I doing this? Or, you know, you evaluate, like, all the work you put into it and all that. But I mean, like, just every little moment like this, like, we're doing, or you get a win, or a band gets a placement on a whatever, you know, whatever. So whatever win helps us to kind of, like, you know, keep going, if you mm-hmm. will, right?
So yeah. But I think one of the hardest things being in that position is executing,
mm-hmm.
porque sometimes it's a matter of getting that direction, and we've experienced where we have given direction to different people, but they don't do anything with it,
right?
And they have their own excuses on what's in their way, what's blocking them from doing it. There's still a little bit of fear involved, but I can promise you this: in most cases, if you just act, if you just do something, get started, it's going to help you get closer to making a real decision, of an important decision in your life, whether this is something for you and you want to keep going down that path. And always be open-minded to learn, always be open-minded to be coached, always be open-minded to be given advice, because those that don't are missing out big opportunities. And also be very careful on who's giving you that advice, because if it's somebody that's not doing shit, maybe you don't need to listen to them. Look for people that are going in the right direction, going down the right path. Get advice from them. Or maybe you realize that, you know what, this is not the thing for you, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Now it's just a matter of finding something else that you can be passionate about, something that can, you know, get the bills paid, But the important thing is taking that first step. And maybe that first step is picking up the phone. Maybe that first step is sending an instant message to like a label, like My Grito, like a label to Wiretap, to ask a question. Mm-hmm. We'll respond to it and we'll provide as much help as we can. But I think that's, in my experience, that's what I've seen most of the time where dreams don't come true. That sounded kind of corny, but I apologize. Los que no tienen ganas to actually try and execute some of this stuff. All they do is continue to bitch about how life is hard, life is hard. I get it. It is. But you got to do something about it. And for those that want to do something about it, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to turn around for you right away. But you have to keep fighting. You have to keep fighting and know that there are good people out there that will give you the guidance, give you help if you ask for it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's that saying, closed mouths don't get fed, you know, and that's it's something that's just easy. Even if you're going to get rejected, like, who cares? Just ask. And that's something, a big obstacle that I had at first, like, no, I don't want to say that ask or something because they're going to say no and I'm going to feel like stupid. But at some point you get rejected so many times, you kind of get, you know, cold to the fucking nose, you know, you're just like, all right, cool. On to the next one. And then the next one or the next two might say yes. And then boom, you got your opportunities, you got your growth. You know, and so on and so forth.
There was a movie that I just recently saw. I think it was on Hulu. A Million Miles Away. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen it?
I just watched it this weekend.
Is that the one with the astronaut one with Michael Peña?
Yeah. Simon. Yeah. I don't want to ruin, no spoiler alerts, but what I will tell you just in briefing, that was a fucking tearjerker for me because there was a lot of fucking wonderful moments in that movie. And maybe it's because it's a little bit more raza and I was connecting it to my experiences quite a bit. But a little bit of the takeaway, it's not taking too much away from the movie, but a little bit. He was trying so many fucking times, getting rejected time and time and time again, but he knew what his dream was and he wanted to keep pushing and keep trying every single time. But it wasn't until really he opened up a little bit more to his spouse, to his wife, or his wife caught that he was trying to apply for NASA for so many times, that she was the one that gave him the right guidance and saying, you know what, you keep getting rejected. What is it that all these other candidates that are getting accepted, what do they have that you don't? And he started going down all this list. All right, let's make sure that you're doing all that same shit, that you're also getting a lot of hours as a pilot under your belt, that you're also scuba you're certified as a scuba diver, all these different things. To me, that was very inspirational because the passion was there. He had it. But el cabrón needed a little bit of guidance on what more he needed to be doing in order for him to really kick that door open.
Yes.
I saw it this weekend too. And the example you're giving there, to me, I saw that as like, even though he knew he was just as talented as these people that were getting accepted, right? I feel like he wasn't totally believing in himself or feeling like he deserved a spot at that table. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because I think that may have been a cultural thing. Like, even though how advanced you, however far in your career you get, something in the back of your head sometimes feels like, shit, do I deserve to be at this table?
Yeah.
You know, and you got it. And I think his wife telling him what is it that you don't have helped him kind of believe like, oh shit, I do deserve to be at this table. You know, that's why I think that's when he did all of a sudden went out and gained the experience that he needed to be to get accepted, right? So yeah, great movie. I highly recommend it, just like you said.
I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah.
No, but you know, it's just going back to the thing again, it's just that's the drive is gonna take you as far as you want it. Like, you know, again, it's gonna be discouraging moments. I'm sure you've had your share, both of you. I've had my share. But it's just about, you know, just getting up, you know, it's like when you fall. I fell on the mosh pit at Chincha, my knees hard. I got bruised for like 3-4 days, but I got up and I went back in there. I stopped after that because I was like, dude, I was exhausted, man. I can't hang anymore inside of those. But it's like, you know, a metaphor to life. Like, you just got to get in, fucking take a breath, get out, go back in, and, you know, just kind of find that balance where you can feel confident, but you can also feel like, you know, stay in touch with your, how do I say, with that fear part of yourself. Because, you know, knowing that fear is there is just going to make you stronger in terms of your determination to break through it, you know. Mm-hmm. But thank you guys for making the time. Thank you guys so much for that. And for people who haven't found out about My Grito, what is the best way for them to reach you guys?
Well, we have a website, mygitho.net, where you can find and, you know, purchase records, press, you know, purchase shirts, whatever, whatnot. Of course, we're on all the socials at mygitho, on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, everything. So, yeah, but again, like, you know, thank you for having us, man. Thanks for giving us a platform to tell our story, of course, and, you know.
Appreciate you guys. With that being said, you guys enjoy the rest of your night.
That's it,
everybody.
Le echan ganas, cabrones.